Welcome back to the Marty Blick Tapes, the podcast that delves into the many cases taken on by the brilliant private detective, Marnie Blick. Marnie was active throughout the 90s and gained a lot of acclaim as one of the most sought-after private investigators in the world. But after a traumatic accident, she was left paralyzed from the waist down. Undeterred, she continued her detective work with the help of an assistant named Finn Graham. Marnie worked from home while Finn went out into the field to conduct interviews and gather clues and evidence. What you'll be hearing are the phone calls between Marnie and Finn, as well as taped interviews conducted by Finn.
Marnie kept incredibly detailed records and notes on each case, something we're very thankful for, because otherwise this process would be quite a nightmare. So thanks, Marnie. And that brings us to today's case. This case had more than one victim, more than one murder. Five people lost their lives during the case we've named The Brutal Burning at Star Cinema. In the middle of the day, on November 3rd, 1996, a small movie theater called Star Cinema was completely engulfed in flames during a showing of Baz Luhrmann's 1996 film, Romeo and Juliet. Only four people were at this screening, but all four died in this attack.
And we say attack because this was very clearly an arson. Initial investigation found that both entrances to the screening room had been barred from the outside with chains, and three containers of kerosene were later found at the scene of the crime.
The four victims were Helena Machado, an elderly English teacher at the local high school, Morris Floyd, a film enthusiast, Jacob Bronstein, a dentist, and his daughter, Anne Bronstein, a junior at that same high school.
The crime shook the community to its core, yet police investigations were unable to find a lead anywhere. The case lay cold until our very own Marnie Blick was contacted by one of the victims' sister. Gemma Haney was Morris Floyd's sister, and like so many people who lose loved ones to crimes, she couldn't rest easy knowing that the person who did something so heinous was not put to justice. So Marnie really was her only and last hope.
Losing family is... I know how hard that can be.
I appreciate that. I really do. I've been lucky with the community here in town. They've all been amazing helping us through all of this. And so many people are affected. It's not just me.
This is Gemma Haney.
I understand.
She's in her mid-60s and is Morris Floyd's younger sister. Morris Floyd was one of the four that perished in the fire. Gemma had married early in life, but had separated since and now lived on her own. A very active member of local society, Gemma volunteered at the local library, was a member of two different gardening societies, and had an overall reputation for being a lovely and generous human being. Now back to the first phone call between Marnie and Gemma.
Let's start here. So, David Bronstein, Ann Bronstein, Elena Machado, and your brother, Morris.
Yes.
Did you know any of the other victims?
Yes. Yeah, I knew them all.
How well?
Oh, Elena and I'd say, are good friends. We're good friends. I guess I didn't know Anne well, just in passing. I've seen her and her dad at school events that I've helped out with. And yeah.
Okay, so you didn't know David as well?
Yeah, I guess.
Or very well.
Also, just in passing.
Okay.
He wasn't my dentist, but so many of my friends here was. He was theirs.
Okay, and obviously your brother.
Yeah.
Were you two close?
Yeah. Yeah, we were. We were. He was sort of the opposite of me. I love people. I love being a part of things. And, well, he was very private. He loved movies.
I'm so sorry for your loss, Gemma. Again.
Thank you, Detective.
whenever you're ready.
Yeah. Morris loved movies, and he, every single Sunday, he'd watch whatever Star Cinema was showing for the matinee screening. Didn't matter what it was, he was there. He always told me that it was like his going to church.
Okay, how consistently was this, would you say?
Oh, yeah, I mean, yeah, I mean, every Sunday. I can't remember a single time he didn't go unless he was sick or... Yeah, no, I don't even think it then. That was his ritual.
Did he usually go with somebody or was he alone?
Well, I think just usually alone unless... I don't know. No, yeah, usually alone. It was just his thing.
I get that. Okay. Okay, the reason I'm asking is because if any of the four victims were targeted specifically, someone would have had to know that they were going to be there. And if your brother had this routine, as you say, that was predictable, that becomes an option.
Yeah, right. I thought about that, too.
And here we're dealing with either a targeted attack or it could still be a random act. It's not uncommon for there to be no link between an arsonist and any one specific victim.
Right. Right, right. That makes sense.
Okay. So, the investigation... Okay, the investigation found kerosene bottles at the crime scene.
Yeah.
Found the doors were barricaded from the outside, chains and a lock on both exits.
Yeah.
Was there anyone who would have wanted to harm Morris or do harm to Morris? It could be something small even, just a dispute, an argument, you know, anything that you might have known of.
Yeah, so, I don't know how to, I think, oh, this is hard.
It's okay. What were you thinking?
I don't want to just throw someone under the bus without, I mean, it's just based off one thing.
Okay, well, look, right now we're just trying to get all the information we can, right? This is about finding justice for the people who were killed that day. For your brother.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Okay, so my brother Morris gave our younger brother, my other brother, a good amount of money as a loan.
How much? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know exactly how much. It was a lot, though. A couple of $1,000. He was just going through some rough times, you know, the stuff. And yeah, I want to say a week before it happened, they had this huge falling out over it. Renee didn't want to pay him back, and Morris felt used. It was, you know, God, I tried to mediate it, but...
All right, his name is Renee... Renee Floyd?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're not assuming anything based on just that. But it could be, you know, it would be great to talk to Renee. Could we get his contact information from you?
Well, yeah. Doesn't have a phone.
Oh.
But I can give you his address.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
Also, just so you know, Renee has had some issues with addiction in the past. We've always tried to help out.
Got it. Yeah.
Well, that's really the only thing that happened where I don't know. I've just been thinking about it.
Are you close with Renee, too?
No. Not as much as with Morris.
Okay.
It's just difficult to get a hold of him, and his lifestyle is, it's just hard to see him.
Yep. Got it. Okay, well, I think that's a good place to start. My assistant Finn is flying over currently. He'll be there tomorrow. We're hoping to talk to some of the other families and friends connected to the victims. We'll keep you updated.
Marty got the address for Renee Floyd, and the next day, Finn was already in town. From what we can tell, Finn got to Renee's apartment, but no one was there. What we have next is a conversation that Finn records midway through with Ben Keller, Renee's next-door neighbor in the apartment complex they live in. Ben, the neighbor, is described as short, balding, with a big, shaggy brown beard.
It's pretty rowdy in there.
Do you remember the last time you saw him?
Didn't see him, but heard he was home.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember around when that was?
Oof.
Give or take.
Would have been like 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago.
Uh-huh. Got it. Do you think... I understand this is a while ago now, but do you remember anything weird happening last November? Early November?
Nothing specific.
Uh-huh. Do you understand? Was Renee home then?
I don't remember. Kind of always been in and out.
Well, Ben, if Renee does get back, could you give me a call?
Yeah, can do.
Thank you. You're all alone.
So Finn had asked Ben a few questions before the recording began, asking whether Ben knew any of Renee's friends or where to find him when he wasn't home. And unfortunately, Ben didn't know. Renee had just disappeared.
Next, Marty wanted to talk to Irene Mills. Irene was the only person working at the cinema the day of the attack. The cinema was tiny, with just a single screening room, so Irene would manage the box office as well as start the projection for the screenings on Sundays. She was in the projection room when the fire started. She smelled the fire, and she managed to escape before it was too late. She was, in fact, the only person to have survived the attack. She's described as a sweet, kind woman in her mid-30s, bright blue eyes behind heavy horn-rimmed glasses, wispy hair, pulled back in a tight bun. She wore several beaded bracelets on each arm.
So before we start, how are you doing?
Physically or mentally?
Both.
I'm all right. I wasn't injured in the fire. Inhaled a little bit of smoke. That's about it. Most of it's just been thinking if I could have done something done something different.
I'm sure you know this already, but there really isn't anything you could have done.
I know.
And I'm glad you made it out alive.
Yeah.
Would it be okay for me to ask you some questions about that day?
Yeah, of course. I'm fine.
Okay. Okay, so can you describe that day for me?
Yeah, what do you want me to start with?
Around what time did you get to the cinema?
The matinees on Sunday are always at 1, so I get in around noon, set everything up, usually set up the projection first.
Okay.
Then open up the doors 30 minutes before. As usual, Morris shows up first, pretty much right when I open.
Right. He's always there on Sundays, right?
Always, without fail.
Okay. So, in the initial police report, you told investigators that you saw a man in a hoodie in the lobby before the screening started, correct?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so far, that's been the main suspect, but they couldn't identify the man.
Right.
You said, he was wearing that hoodie, a cowboy's hat.
Yeah, like the football team, not a cowboy hat.
Right.
It was like a baseball cap with the star on it.
Yep, got it.
Just wanted to clarify in case people are out there looking for a dude with a cowboy hat.
Of course. Of course not.
And I only recognized it because they won the Super Bowl last year. I don't follow sports.
Okay. So, also, you said he was wearing sunglasses, right?
Yeah. Just really looked like typical person who didn't want to be recognized, you know? And, like, I didn't think it was because he was gonna... I didn't think anything.
No, of course. Did he talk to anyone?
Not that I saw. He came in and out of the lobby a few times, so I asked if he was trying to buy a ticket. He already had one.
Oh, so you talked to him?
Yeah.
Was there anything about his voice that stood out to you?
No, nothing.
Okay. And you can't really tell how old the man was, right?
No, not confidently. Could have been anywhere from 18 to late 30s. I doubt older than that, than late 30s. Just... I really couldn't tell.
Got it. Okay, it says a bunch of tickets were booked that day. by a group, but the group never showed up, correct?
Yes, the day before. We got reservations for... Actually, they just asked to reserve all the seats that hadn't been ticketed yet.
But no one from that group came in?
No. Everyone who... The only people who were there, they had their tickets already before those reservations came in. Except for Morris, who... I just always kept one seat free because I knew it was Sunday and... Yeah.
Do those kind of reservations happen often?
Not often.
Okay.
It's usually schools or... Yeah, just private screenings for things, but that's what I assumed it was. Just like a school group. The movie was Romeo and Juliet, so yeah. I thought it was a school group coming in, and thank God they didn't.
Right. Do you remember who made the reservation?
It was over the phone. Someone called Matt Bergen.
Did the investigators manage to talk to Mr. Bergen?
No. As far as I know, they never got a hold of him.
Do you think it's possible that the same man who was... waiting in the lobby made those reservations over the phone? Was the voice similar?
I thought about that, and I just can't tell. I don't remember.
Got it. That's okay. Especially over the phone. It's hard to know what someone sounds like. So.
Marnie also asked Irene about the other victims in attendance. If there was anything she could remember that might have been out of the ordinary that day. But there just wasn't. Everything was focused on the man in the hoodie. It feels pretty safe to say that this is our arsonist. At this point, we just don't know who that person is.
The next person that Marnie wants to hear from is Principal Brianna DeLisi. She's the principal of the high school that Elena Machado, another victim of the fire, taught at. Not only that, this is also the high school that Anne Bronstein attended. As you can imagine, the school was totally rocked by both of these losses. From what we can tell, Mrs. Machado was dearly beloved by her students. She represented all the great qualities a teacher can have. She was funny, inspiring, and was known to go out of her way to create meaningful relationships with her students.
We think it's safe to assume that Mrs. Machado was at the screening to scope out and see if Romeo and Juliet was the kind of film she could take her class to. She had just worked through the play with her junior class, a class that Anne Bronstein, another victim, was actually in. So definitely a weird bit of overlap there. So now, Finn is at Bernard High School with Principal Brianna DeLisi. In his notes, Finn describes her as a very focused yet warm person.
Finn, right?
She has wavy black
yes.
hair and is
okay,
in her late
now,
50s.
I got it. No worries. Thank you. How can I help you?
Yeah, like I mentioned, we're investigating the arson attack at Star Cinema. Detective Marnie Blick wanted me to talk to you
mm-hmm.
since the school is connected to two of the victims. Of course, you know, Mrs. Machado and Anne Bronstein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a nightmare.
I'm sure.
But it feels like everyone has come together, and we've been trying to find ways to honor both of them.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell me a little bit about Mrs. Machado?
Yeah. She was easy, the most dedicated teacher we had here. She'd been with the school for about 15 years, I think. And yeah, students loved her, appreciated mm-hmm. her. She was incredible. And an incredible teacher.
Were there any complaints or issues with students or other staff that might have been, or anything that could have been brought
up? Literally never. Not one thing, which even with great teachers, there will be a parent or someone who disagrees about a grade or has some issue. But with Miss Machado, never.
So it's fair to say you can't think of anyone or for any reason why anyone would want to hurt Mrs. Machado?
None at all. We looked into whether there was something going on before the attack, and there wasn't. I mean, I'd be shocked if this intended target was Miss Machado. I think it was just... anyway, I don't know.
Oh, okay, so Anne Bronstein, she was a junior student here, right?
Correct? Mm-hmm. Right, yes. And also, Anne was a model student. Straight A's across the board. Top prospect for any university.
Yeah, I'm sure.
She wanted to apply to.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, she did everything right, you know?
Yeah. Were you able to find if... excuse me. If you were able to find out if anyone had any ill will towards her, a jealous student, a boyfriend?
Nothing. Uh-huh. Anne got along with everybody. She had a boyfriend. Not sure how serious they were, but no, nothing. We could find nothing that would lead to what happened.
I see. And could you tell me the boyfriend's name?
I can get that for you, but I'm not actually sure. I'll find out.
Thank you. That would be great. Also, if she had any particularly close friends, parents, permission, we'd love to be able to.
At this point, Marnie and Finn are just trying to get as much information on the four victims as possible. They had to cast a wider net than usual since they still have no idea who the intended victim really was. Most of Marnie's cases have one clear victim, so the amount of interviews Finn and Marnie have to undertake on this case is pretty staggering. We're just going to be showing you the ones we believe best help tell the story of this case.
So the next interview is between Finn and Daniel Bronstein. Daniel is Anne's brother and, of course, Jacob Bronstein's son. He's a few years older than Anne was and was studying pre-med at Penn State. He's described as tall and athletic, blue eyes, dark straight hair. Finn writes that he's boyishly handsome. He was also instantly cleared as a potential suspect since he was seen hundreds of miles away on his school campus during the attack.
This interview has a few abrupt cuts in it. We imagine that Finn cut the recording whenever it became too overwhelming for Daniel. This is a young man who lost his father and his baby sister, and the sheer immensity of it all still seems to weigh very heavy on him. I can't imagine what that must feel like.
State again that I have your permission to record this conversation?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. All right, so can you tell us about what happened that day?
I mean, not anything really. I got the phone call later and that was it.
You were out of town that day?
Yeah. I go to Penn State. I came down that night. And, yeah. I've taken a semester off to be here.
Are you staying with family?
Yeah. My uncle lives here. I've been staying with them. Just processing.
Okay, that's good. I'm sure that helps a bit.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about your dad? Did he have any enemies? Any tensions with people?
Not that I knew of. He was a pretty normal guy. My mom passed away when I was 8 and was too young to remember. And my dad raised us on his own. Worked a lot. But still found time for us.
Got it. Do you know why he was at
this... Can we take a second?
Yes, of course. Go back. So did... Did you know why he was at this movies that day? Did he go often?
Actually, no. Okay. He wasn't really big on movies. He was a huge Shakespeare fan, though. He did theater growing up, and yeah. He was obsessed with Shakespeare, so... He was really excited about the movie.
Nice. So you knew he was going to the movies that day?
No. But, like, weeks before, he told me he was really excited about it. So, yeah. It made sense when they told me.
Was Anne into Shakespeare, too?
I don't know. I think they had just been working on it in school. With Mrs. Machado.
Was she also your teacher in high school?
Yeah. My English teacher.
Was it normal for your dad to bring Anne along to things?
Yeah, that's not... Like, that's not abnormal. We always tried to do activities together.
Got it. Principal DeLucy mentioned that Anne had a boyfriend, right?
What? No way. Not that I know of.
Right, well, you've been in college. You've been studying and...
Sure, but Dad would never be cool with that. No way.
Why is that?
Oh, just, my dad was amazing and cool about a lot of stuff, but he took dating way too seriously. There's no way she was dating.
Unless she kept it a secret.
Sure, right? I guess so.
Daniel, do you know if your dad had any issues with people that he worked with? He had his,
No, I can't think of anything.
Anything?
Nothing he told me.
Got it.
nothing I saw or heard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've talked to everyone who worked there, and yeah, nothing that stood out to me. It sucks, but I just don't think whoever did this was after my dad or my sister. I think...
It's okay.
Yeah. I think they were just collateral.
Mm-hmm.
Just happened to be there at the wrong time. Can we stop for a second?
Yeah, of course. You know what? We're good. I appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time, Daniel.
Marty conducted a few more interviews. A lot, actually. Marty spoke with Jacob Bronstein's co-workers, with other teachers at the high school. Nothing revelatory came from any of those. Except maybe that it was confirmed by one of Anne's friends that she did in fact have a boyfriend. His name was Christian Matich. He was a fellow junior, and that's who Marty wants to talk to next.
Christian is described as average-looking, dirty blonde hair, medium build at 16 years old. He has deep, sunken-in brown eyes. We actually have a few different photos of him. Some from before the fires, some after. And the difference between those taken before and those taken after is stark. What once seemed like a bright, happy teenager now looks like someone whose light has been extinguished. Finn meets him at a coffee shop. It's freezing cold. Christian is wrapped in a Steeler scarf. For our international listeners or those who are unfamiliar with American sports, the Steelers are a popular American football team.
You're okay with me recording this?
Yeah.
Cool. Right. Tough go last year, huh?
Huh? Oh, yeah. That sucked.
All right, so how you been holding up?
Good, I guess.
No, I'm sorry about what happened.
Yeah, thanks.
Can you tell me where you were when you found out?
I was still at work. I do part-time at a shipping center.
Is that in town? Is that local?
No, it's one town over. I live in Brownsville.
Oh, okay. Do you remember the last time you saw Anne? When that might have been?
Well, I was supposed to hang out with her later that day. We made plans.
Mm-hmm.
After she... I thought she had soccer practice that day, and then we were supposed to hang out after.
So that last time you saw her was... Or when was the last time you saw her?
Just the day before, at school.
How long have you been dating for, roughly?
I think, like, 3 months, 4 months, something like that.
Can you tell me about your relationship, what it was like?
It was great. She was great. She was, like... my first real girlfriend. Yeah.
Was there anyone around her who maybe had a problem with her? Some kind of ongoing argument or some, you know, anything?
No. There wasn't anything like that with Anne.
Okay.
No.
Was there anything weird leading up to that day? Anything out of the ordinary at all?
Not really. I just thought it was weird she went to the movies with her dad. I don't think they did much together like that, and yeah, one time this happens. I don't know. I wish I had taken the day off, done something with her instead, just anything.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's good.
Hello? Yeah. Oh, okay. Thanks, Ben. Cool, thanks. See you in a bit. Hey, man, I'm sorry. Is it cool if we give you a call with additional questions that we may have down the line? I just got an emergency I gotta deal with.
Oh, no, yeah, that's cool. Just let me know.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for your help, man. We're super committed to figuring out who did this to Anne.
The call Finn got while talking to Christian was from Ben, Renee's neighbor. Just as a reminder, Renee's the brother of Morris Floyd, who died in the fire, and Gemma Haney, the lady who brought Marnie onto the case. Ben told Finn that apparently Renee had finally come home. Right as Finn leaves the cafe, he calls Marnie.
Hey, it is me.
What's up? You still with Christian?
No, I just got a call from Ben. He's the neighbor. He's the neighbor of Renee.
Okay.
Apparently he just got home.
He's home now.
Well, I'm going to find out right now.
Okay, great. Call me when you get there.
Yeah, I will. I just wanted to let you know.
Okay.
So Finn heads over to Renee's apartment complex. He gets to the apartment and calls Marnie.
I'm outside the apartment.
Okay, do you want me to stay on?
Is that okay?
Yeah, of course.
All right, I'm going to knock. Oh, shit.
What?
The door's open.
Go inside.
Is that legal?
Just check if he's home.
Okay. Hello? Hello? Renee? I don't think anyone's home.
Well, are the lights on?
Yeah, I'll look around.
Okay.
Hello? Hello?
Finn?
Yeah, I don't think anyone's here.
Are you sure? Okay, well...
Oh, fuck.
What?
Oh, fuck.
What?
Renee's here. But he's passed out, or he's at Goatee or something, I don't know, I don't...
Check for a pulse.
I am. Oh, damn, Mar, I think he's dead, or I don't know.
Okay, I'm gonna call
the cops,
don't worry.
Oh, fuck.
Finn.
Fuck.
Finn, I'll call you back. Just, god damn it.
And that's where we'll leave off with part one of The Brutal Burning at Star Cinema. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss out on the next part. And if you want to help us out further, then please leave us a review wherever you're listening to this podcast.
And if you really love us and what we're doing, consider checking us out on Patreon. We love the support and are happy to hear that you're enjoying this as much as we enjoy making it.
Thanks for listening to our show. As ever, we're always trying to improve the way we present the cases to you, so any feedback, please send it our way. You can find us on Instagram at Antonius Nazareth and at Nicholas M. Sato, and you can email us at themarniebleaktapes@gmail.com. Edited by Nicholas Sato and Antonius Nazareth.
Music by Antonius Nazareth. And as always, a special thanks to Mallory Blick and Nicholas.